Issues project. This is the first meeting of the coordination team to assist the ICANN VIP team to produce the integrated issues report. My name is Dennis Jennings, and I'll be trying to chair this session. Could we go around the table and everybody introduce themselves very briefly, starting perhaps over there, Bahir, can you?
Sure. I'm Bahir Esmet. I'm with ICANN. I was the staff liaison for the Arabic case study.
My name is Vladimir Shadronov. I was a participant in the Cyrillic case study team.
Alexei Sazonov, coordinator of Cyrillic case study team.
Carrie Karp, representing the host organization for the Latin study.
Sorry, James Singh, I'm representing the Chinese variant study on the behalf of Xiaodong.
Edmund Chung, observer from the JIG.
Kim Davies, I'm an SME, and I was also providing staff support to the Latin team.
SME in this case being subject matter expert.
That's correct.
Thank you. Thank you, Kim. Naila.
I'm Naila Saras, and I provided the staff liaison support for the Devanagari team.
Karen Lentz, also part of the ICANN project team.
Steve Sheik, staff liaison for the Chinese team.
Julie Headland, staff liaison for the Greek case study team.
Sarmad Hussain, I'm the coordinator for the Arabic case study team.
Hi, Akshat Joshi from SIDEC. I'm part of Devanagari case study team.
Neha Gupta, member of the Devanagari case study team.
I'm Andrew Sullivan. I was subject matter expert on protocols for this, I guess.
Joseph Yi, team member for the Chinese case study team.
Patrick Jones, staff liaison for the Cyrillic team.
Francisco Arias, SME for registry operations.
Yes, in the world I come from, SME is a small or medium-sized enterprise, so I just wanted to clarify. There's one person on the phone. Can we have, can you introduce yourself, Mr. or Miss or Mrs. on the phone? Hello? Can you hear me? Do we know who it is, Naila?
I can hear them, but I can't hear them. Yeah.
We're just sorting things out here.
They're there and they can hear us. We can't hear them over the PA. Okay. He's fixing
it. Okay, we cannot hear you yet. The staff here are trying to sort that out. So we'll come back to you for an introduction. I'd like to just take a brief moment to set the scene about what we're trying to do today. Oops, Daisy, what did I do? Oh, there we go. So just to give you an overview of our project and to put it into context, we have just completed the 6 case studies. And I suppose the first thing I want to say is thank you to all of you and to all of the case study team members for the enormous amount of effort that I know you put in and for your success in delivering 6 case study team reports on schedule, close to schedule. Some of you actually made the schedule. Most of you completed it within a few days of the original deadline, and I think that's a tremendous achievement, and I congratulate you and thank you on doing that. It's a very important part of the project, and it's a very important part of the way that this project is being run. It's been driven by the community, for the community, not supported by ICANN. The next step, the next phase, phase 2, is the integrated issues report, which is this meeting kicks off. And then the third phase is the development of solutions, which we haven't yet defined, and we're working on exactly what that phase will be and how we will do it. This is our first meeting of the coordination team, and the coordination team members are listed there, as you know, and I think we're going to get printouts of that to circulate. Our agenda is as follows. I speak now with the, at the introduction. Then we're going to have brief reviews of the case study reports. And then the current approach is that we go and try and identify common variant issues or issues that are common to two or more of the case studies, ideally all the case studies. See how far we get with that. This is a working session to be led by Andrew. Then we have a session on the unique variant issues, those variant issues that are unique to particular cases, if there are such. Then we work on other variant-related issues. Lastly, and in terms of main sessions, we'll review the definitions and the terminology discussion because we didn't want to get hung up on that right at the beginning of the meeting. And then Carolyn will lead us through a discussion of the outline of the issues report, and we'll wrap up with a discussion of what the next steps and how we will proceed. So I'm going to talk about the agenda, the working practices, the proposed timeline, and an overview of the issues report itself. The working practices are, this report will be drafted and edited by the project team, and the coordination team, you here in this room, have an advisory and reviewing role and will liaise with the six case study teams. So you'll both advise us, provide the content, and also liaise with the six case study teams that continue to exist. We'll use the integrated VIP list, which is up and which you're all familiar with, I hope, and we'll keep the community wiki regularly updated. We'll meet by teleconference. This is to be determined to discuss, that's what TBD stands for, to be determined, by this team. The suggestion is that we'll meet every second week, maybe more frequently if necessary, but once every 2 weeks, but we can discuss this and decide on that during the day. The proposed timeline is pretty short. We're kicking off with the coordination team meeting here in Dakar. The public comment for the six case studies closes on the 14th of November. Hopefully we'll have a lot of comment. And the case study teams, the six case study teams, are being asked to start the analysis of the comments as soon as the closing date happens. We're not, however, asking for the case study teams to produce revised reports, just to do an analysis of the comments and present that to us, not go through the whole business of revising the report and so on, but present to the coordination team and to the ICANN team the analysis of the comments. By the 28th of November, I keep doing this, my apologies, by the 28th of November. And by the 5th of December, notice the short time lead between the analysis of the comments and we're looking for a draft integrated issues report. And sometime around then, and this is a suggestion and we need to discuss it, we're suggesting we'll have a face-to-face meeting in California. Bring the whole coordination team or everybody who can to Marina del Rey to have a full-day working session to try and flesh out the report. And again, this is a suggestion. We can discuss it throughout the day and decide whether that is the right thing to do. 10 days later, we plan to post the integrated issues report for public comment. That's a very, very short time scale, but that's what we're trying to do. Oops.
I'm sorry. That's me. Sorry.
You've interfered with my... Not her.
Dennis?
Yes?
Francisco's fixing this. Can we try the phone again?
Oh, yes. Calling the individual on the phone... Can you hear us, and can you respond and see if we can hear you?
Hello.
Hey, good.
Yes, it's Alexei Mikhailov, and I was a part of the Kirillic team.
Excellent. Thank you very much indeed. Have you been able to hear and see the presentation up to now?
Yeah, I was able to hear it just fine, but I was not able to see it. I actually don't have a link to Adobe Connect if there is one.
Okay. You should be able to connect to Adobe Connect. Can you try again?
Sure, but I don't have a link.
The link was emailed to the integrated VIP list. So if you look at that email in the list, you'll find the link there. If you click on that, that should bring you into Adobe. Okay, let me continue.
Thank you. I just connected.
Thank you. Excellent. Welcome. So back to my presentation. The 15th of December, that's 10 days after we publish, that we receive the... let me just go back and reset. This machine is too smart for me. The draft integration issues report on the 5th of December, a meeting in California about the same time, and publishing the draft for public comment on the 15th of December. 30th of January, the public comment period closes, analysis starts, and on the 15th of February, a final review call, and on the 20th of February, publishing the report. And then on the March the 12th, in Costa Rica, the ICANN board will consider the report. This is a fairly challenging timeline, but hey, you matched up to the challenge before, so hopefully this will work well. Overview of the report. We're suggesting, and again, this is a suggestion. This will emerge through the discussion, that there will be sections on the common issues across the case studies, issues particular to specific case studies, and guidelines or advice that can be used for the study and development of additional case study reports. One of the things we would like to get out of this, it's not as important as the first two items, but is some set of advice or guidelines that people can use to do additional case studies. Here are the list of objectives. Identify the set of issues that require solutions. Identify any set of issues to be solved for specific scripts. Classify according to type and priority. And identify the groups or the processes to resolve the issues. Fairly standard stuff. Identify where further study is needed, if any. And, of course, extremely important in the ICANN world is to document the levels of support for the conclusions and to document the analysis and rationale undertaken for the conclusions reached. This is a very important part of the openness and transparency, is to not only publish the work, but the levels of support and the analysis and rationale for the conclusions, and create this guideline for additional cases. Which is, I put in quotes and query because I'm not quite sure what that is yet. We need to define that. Key stakeholders, just to state the obvious, are the ICANN board and the board variant working group, which on behalf of the board oversees this activity. Of course, the policy groups and the advisory committees, and I suppose most important and should be really, this should be really, I suppose, in the reverse order, the potential TLD requesters and applicants. And that's it. So are there any questions to me or to the team about that or about the agenda? Samit.
So you said we'll come back and address some of the things which we need to discuss. Do you have a specified time for that? Or is that
No, but if you want to raise an issue now, please do.
For the face-to-face meeting. It may not it just be too early, but... it may be a good idea to eventually at some point fix the date and the place so that we can get the visas in time and all that.
Absolutely. I think lunchtime is this where we socialize that, and then after lunch we'll have a session to try, we'll have a discussion as to fixing the date and so on.
And venue as well, if possible, if we can meet somewhere in...
The suggestion was Marina Del Rey.
Sort of on one side of the world from where we're coming from.
Understood. Maybe there's a better location. Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, hearing no questions, we have a number of brief presentations. Brief presentations of the case study reports, 5 minutes, again, my God, we're demanding. And, including time for questions, which is probably impossible, but nevertheless, the point is just to highlight the sort of the key headline issues. So, Sarmad, could I ask you to lead off for the Arabic case study? Yeah? Oh, you have your revised version?
I can make you presenter if you want. Sorry? I can make you presenter in Adobe Connect.
So short pause while we sort out the technology.
Thank you, Dennis. So this summarizes some of the main things which we've taken out of our discussions over the last few months. Next slide, please. This slide is just an overview of the script, and it's written from right to left, and then a couple of points to note is that it's a cursive script, so if I'm writing the same character four times, it joins to form a single glyph, which is normally referred to as a ligature, or it can occur separately if it has spaces around it. And when it joins, it actually acquires a different shape, and that's what's being pointed out here. And the initial shape is different from the medial shape, and that's different from the final shape, and that's different from the isolated shape. So they're logically four shapes, though in practice there are many more. So this character Bay can take as many as 40-plus shapes based on which writing style you're using. But logically there are four shapes here. Next slide, please. Okay, so one of the things which we found was that protocol allows a series of characters, but for TLD, for the case of TLDs, we recognize that not all those p-valid characters are relevant. And what we've done is recommended a set of characters which may not be allowed for TLDs, which mostly include combining marks and some other characters like digits. But in this particular case, we need some feedback from the team. Did not include representatives from linguistic communities which are using Arabic script for African languages. So that's something which we, that's an expertise we did not have, and that's why we actually need some more feedback to actually firm this up. Next slide, please. One of the things which came up and was debated in quite some detail was the use of, there's a need, it's a cursive script, Arabic, and so if we have to have multi-word expressions as TLDs, we need to have a mechanism to represent them as two separate entities. And since there's no capitalization or space is not allowed, there's no clear way of representing this. So what we debated was either using a hyphen, which is being preferred by Arabic language community, and then other languages which are using Arabic script, including Urdu and Farsi, suggested using zero-bit non-joiner. And this is an issue which is still not closed. There's been some detailed discussion on this, and we need to eventually close this. But at this time, we're not really sure which way it's going to go. We've documented the pros and cons in either case. Zero-bit non-joiner hyphen, both are currently not allowed in TLDs. Next slide, please. As far as the variants were concerned, we have four different categories of variants. They can be subdivided as well. They have been subdivided in the report as well. But generally, we can classify them as identical cases. The top two rows on the left, they are actually the top, again, the top two rows represent different Unicode points, but they look exactly the same. So it's visually impossible to determine whether which Unicode point it is. Then there are similar cases where community members can feel that they're the same thing, even though visually they're not identical. And then the third case is interchangeable cases, and the third set of rows, the last two rows, represent examples from these two cases. And then there are optional cases in which you have these combining marks, and these are optional, so you can have the same string with or without combining marks. So that's the fourth case. So details and examples and list of character for these cases have been documented in appendices of the report. Next slide, please. One of the things which came up was that what is desired is a cohesive kind of document or representation of this information which can be used to automatically generate the variants, which means that there has to be some, at some point, we need to develop, an XML structure or something which can be processed in which all this information can be fed. It's normally been referred to as a language table, but we do not agree with that name because many cases we are not really talking about a language, but many languages, but in many cases not all languages, so it cannot be a script either. And then it's not a table. Table is an implementation-specific thing. It could be an XML file. It could be something else. And it contains, it can contain many things, including characters, their variants, any additional rules and constraints, and meta information about which languages it represents and so on. So there has to be some process which should take care of defining this structure. We're calling it label generation policy for now. Because we don't want to call it language table, but we can call it something else as well. So this is something which we just made up. Other thing is that there will be quite a few variants, so there is need to automatically generate all the variants for the verification and generation process. There are going to be a lot of variants, so we need to know how to handle the possibilities, whether to
for example, allocate all of them or reserve all of them, or is that possible to not include them in the list in the zone files? And then there is a big question in Arabic script case specifically where variants can be at a character level or a position level. I showed you in the first slide that there are four positions, so you can actually have variants at position level instead of character level. Explain that in more detail later if there is a requirement. Another important thing which we came up with was that these delegations will actually, the variants will actually be in multiple states. So they'll be allocated, they'll be reserved, they'll be blocked, they'll be activated, they'll be delegated, they'll be in a fundamental level or non-fundamental level. And then there will probably be a process in which these will be moving around between these states. So we need to really define a process on how a variant can go into a particular state and go from one state to another state, and what are the constraints and what are the rules in moving these variants within these states. So the whole process really is undefined at this time, and that's a big thing to take care of. Whois lookup is also going to be confusing because they're going to be different. There's going to be a lot of different possibilities of writing the same label. How is that label going to go to the whois information, which is only provided by the for the fundamental label, perhaps? So what we suggested was that if there's a variant label, it should point to the fundamental label only, and then the fundamental label should actually carry the whois information. But that sort of structure is not really supported by the whois, the whole protocol and services structure which exists for whois right now. So that's something which needs to be looked at. We recommend that there should be no extra fees for variant handling, and the main reason for that is because variants are being caused by inherent ambiguity of script and encoding. So it's really not the people who are applying for these strings who are to, quote-unquote, blame for so many variants. They're just inheriting it from whatever has happened in the history developing this. So they should not be paying for extra costs. They're actually providing variants so that people can actually access TLDs as globally as possible. And then there are a host of end user issues from fonts, keyboards, bidirectionality, U label versus A label, interface availability, and support for on different levels from operating systems and fonts and applications, which have been discussed in more detail in the report. And that's it. So the report has been very active participation of the whole team, and obviously this is a next slide, please. So this is a list of the team who participated, and if there are any questions, I can take them now. Next slide.
Sarma, thank you very much indeed for that very brief but very clear recap of your report. Any questions? The next is the Chinese. And James, I believe you're going to give us a brief presentation or a brief talk.
Yeah.
Have you a presentation?
Do you want me to make you presenter? You're here.
So Francisco will come and work magic, and you'll be the presenter. Have we additional people on the phone? Do we know? How many people do we have on the phone?
I think just one.
Okay, thank you. While we're waiting, are you ready to go?
Sorry,
I see. Very clever. The pause is that we're trying to sort out the technology. What do I have to do?
You share?
Sorry about the delay. We're sorting out our technology here.
Hello, this is the doctor here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Ken, while we're waiting, can we take a roll call of the people on the phone?
Hello, this is Raymond Doctor from India. Yes, can you hear me?
I got Raymond Doctor, yes. And the second voice?
I think that was an echo.
Oh. Thank you. We had a couple of additional people join us physically here in the room. Manal, would you like to introduce yourself briefly?
Hello, my name is Raymond Doctor. I've been associated with the VIP Devanagari team group, and I'm glad to be at today's meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Raymond. And Manal?
Manal Ismail from the Arabic case study team. Thank you.
Excellent. And, yeah, please.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Panayotis Papaspiliopoulos from the Greek study team.
Panayotis, welcome.
Thank you.
Please. James, you're on.
Hi, thanks. My name is James. I'm presenting on the behalf of the Chinese case study team. It's a fairly large team comprises of many experts from the list, which I won't read out right now, but it's led by Li Xiaodong, who unfortunately is still on the way to Dhaka. So I'm presenting on his behalf. First, we define our scope of work that we focus on Chinese variant at the top level, but we acknowledge there are issues and effects on the lower levels, and we do look at the concentration of those effects as well as some of the user expectation and consistency between the top and the lower level. While we focus on the Chinese variant, we also recognize that the Chinese script, the Han script, is being used in Japanese and Korean, and therefore we include experts from both Japanese and Japan and Korea, and who give us feedback as well as consideration on the impact of the introduction of Chinese variant at the root level and the impact on their community. And we focus ourselves only on Unicode. There are a lot of Chinese characters that are still not in Unicode, but we can't deal with those, and we only focus on those as in Unicode. The report goes and give a little bit background of how the Chinese character come about and the definition of Chinese character, as well as how it's been used in Japanese and Korean. In total, there's about 70,000 characters, 26,000 in the basic multilingual plane, and 44,000 in the extension BCD in the Unicode repository. The Han script basically evolved from ideograph, or concepts, pictograph that evolved over thousands of years. And we give example of how this evolution works. And the reason we have variants in Chinese is because the PRC government has a simplification process in 1964 and 1986, where they simplified close to 2,200 characters, so that it makes education in Chinese easier. And that has become the official form in China. Subsequently, Singapore adopted the simplified form as an official form too. But unfortunately, the rest of the other Chinese community in Macau, in Hong Kong, in Taiwan, remains to use the traditional form. And therefore, we end up with a situation where certain part of the community uses simplified Chinese and certain part of the community uses traditional. And whereas certain overseas community in US, in Europe, use a mixture of simplified and traditional. Because of the simplification process is being used, the Chinese community feels that both the traditional form and the simplified form are actually the same characters because they have the same meaning, same pronunciation, and therefore we are considered the variant. But they are not always one-to-one. The Japanese also use a Han ideograph, the Han script, and they call it kanji. There's over 6,000 documented Japanese kanji, of which about 2,000 are commonly in use. Japanese also have a simplification process. They call it the new character form versus the old character form. And in general, they are considered variant of each other, except in the cases when it's being used in nouns and names, like person names, like places name. Because domain names are often used as nouns, the Japanese community feels that the handling of variants, there shouldn't be no handling of variants, and each character, the new form and the old form are considered distinct characters on its own. The Korean also use Japanese characters, which they opted over the years into Korean community. But the Han script in Korean is known as Hanja, and that has been slowly phased out in favor of Hangul, which is a phonetic script that's designed by King Sejong in the 15th century. Today, Hanja is no longer used in Korea. By official decree on the 14th of April 2011, the government actually enforced that no government documents are to be written in Hanja at all unless there's a precedent decree. And therefore, the registry operator for .kr has not allowed any Hanja character, Chinese character, to be registered, and there's no intention to do so in the short term or ever. So for the we also look at the definition of Chinese variant in our context. I know that there is an in-depth discussion at the integrated level, but for Chinese variant, we consider characters with different visual form but same pronunciation and same meaning as variant. So what they mean is what they cover is simplified and traditional Chinese characters. And what it also covers are Z variants. Z variants are, you can call it a bug in Unicode, but you could also say it's a feature in Unicode where they are similar looking characters that has same meaning, same sound, but they're given different code points in Unicode, as an example that's noted in the screen. And we try to unify them in this case as variants. But what we do not consider variants are different spelling of forms, different meanings, like synonyms, presentation in multiple scripts, translation are not considered variant in our context. We do look at the user expectation of a Chinese community because, as we mentioned, traditional and simplified have same meaning, same pronunciation, and can be interchangeably used in different contexts. Except that it's written in different form, Chinese users generally regard them as the same. And we did a study on how many variants are there in the top domain names across CN, TW, and HK. Between 70 to 80% of the registered domain names as of this moment in time in the CCTLD has variants. So it's a very big issue that we need to handle about 70 to 80% of the user registration. Because Korean no longer use Hanja, so we only look at the cross impact between kanji and Chinese Hanzi. And we look at how it's being handled at the second level versus at the top level. And the short conclusion is that the Japanese, while there is no variant handling in kanji, they don't mind a conservative approach of reserving variants for the applied string in Japanese. We then look at how we define variance tables, including how do we submit a table, or whether it's been defined by ICANN, how has it been used, whether the variant table should be based on script or language, whether what's the process to create the tables and to update the tables, as well as the standard that we adopt for the variant tables. We are examining 3 RFCs, 4761 and 4263. Or 4363, yeah. We look at some of the evaluation, allocation, delegation, operation of the variants, particularly with the GTLD, the draft expectation process, guidebook process, including how do we look at string similarity, conflict with geography name, discovery of variants, how do we deal with contention, objection, dispute, especially when there are cases where variants contend with each other, how do we deal with that? We consider allocation issues, how our variants and the reserve variants as well as the delegated variants is to be bundled. And we look at delegation issue and as also considering the fees and operation impact on those delegation. We also look at some of the impacts to the related organization with the delegation of the variants, including INR, root server operation, registry, registrar, registrant, domain name related providers, and software application. The conclusion is that the variants in Chinese is very important to us. Without such policy in place, that will create a lot of confusion and potential security problems for the Chinese community. Yeah.
James, thank you very much indeed. Any questions from the coordination team? No, I'm sure there'll be questions later on. Alexei, are you doing the Cyrillic presentation?
Yes.
Do I have your presentation?
Yes.
You do? Okay. Let Francisco do his magic here.
Okay. So here is the presentation of Cyrillic case study team, which is by nature all the issues we've been discussing is different from Arabic and from Chinese case study team, and we have a kind of shared issue, and we had a mutual call with Latin team, so.
Alexei, could you get a little closer to the microphone?
Okay.
I think you're a little faint.
Okay. So, even though I have just 2 slides, we've been working hard, and we concluded weekly calls since Singapore in June, and we had face-to-face meeting in Paris in UNESCO to finalize our report. So we find out that there is about 60 languages in Cyrillic script, and we had experts for not for the 60 languages, but for the majority of the population of the script. From these various languages, team has provided examples of core points likely to cause problems. and we find out that there is no script-wide variance in Cyrillic, and they are only language-related. So, like, it's different. It all depends on the use of the characters in certain Cyrillic languages. And we conclude that care should be taken in introducing variants in Cyrillic characters in TLDs, as variant rules applicable in one language may not apply to another, and since in it could be, if it will be introduced on the root, it will cause a problem. And if you give something to the root, it's almost not possible to take it away. And we stress that none of the issues should prevent delegations of Cyrillic TLDs, because even though the language is wide, there is no such issues that could say, well, we cannot start the process until we resolve something. Well, everything is pretty straightforward. There is no such a big chunk of work as with other languages. Next slide, please. So here is some of the recommendations. So mainly we've been working through the languages, and we were like presenting the potential threat of variants from languages point of view, and we've discussed even in the same language, like speakers, we've discussed certain cases if it could be considered as a variance or not. Such cases as in Russian language is "ye" and "yo" letter. In Ukrainian language is "ge" and "re". It's in Ukraine, we introduced the problem, which is not solved yet. There is an apostrophe, which is not on the keyboard yet. Ukrainian apostrophe, which is a letter, considered to be a letter. So we're seeing that there is a lot of cases. The recent government decision on Cyrillic scripts, and this is because of the collapse of the Soviet Union. Lots of countries emerged there searching for identification, so they're deciding to introduce new characters and change the rules, and sometimes it's hard to keep up, but we introduce the principles how to deal with that, and it's pretty straightforward. So team recommends to block TLD labels that are visually confusable to any delegated labels, both intra and cross script. As we agreed with Latin team, and it was stressed, there is no, there's a much more confusing between Cyrillic and Latin than within Cyrillic itself. So there is no mix of the Latin and Cyrillic should be allowed on the TLD level. And team recommends reserving variant TLD labels for all other variant cases in Cyrillic. TLD should only be allocated to the registry that manages the corresponding fundamental label. And the team identified need for variant table for the root, even though, the meaning for variant table, so we need to decide on meaning more in this new group, because the meaning we put in the variant table, it's not the meaning just discussed here with, by the, for example, Arabic team. And And we identified that further work for the inclusion of characters outside Cyrillic code block need to be done to be available for Cyrillic labels, since any new language presented in Cyrillic group could affect any new rule, could affect the rest of the language, and as I mentioned, the behavior of the same language, of the same character on different languages of the script are not the equal, so it will affect everything. So this is it for now.
Thank you very much indeed. Any questions for now for Alexei? Okay, our next presentation is on the Devanagari script. And Akshat, are you the presenter? No, do we have? Oh. Okay, good. We have a presentation.
I'll be just having a talk. I don't have a presentation message.
All right, so please go ahead.
Okay. Hi, this is Akshat. I'm part of a Devanagari team. I'll just talk you through the basic structure of the report that we have in mind for the Devanagari. That is, first part of that was the basic postulates, the certain assumptions that we thought that were relevant to this particular report. Those are the basic fundamental things that we have assumed before writing a report. So the postulates are like we are basing this taking in consideration the Unicode, then the policies or the recommendations that this report does are only kept in means formulated keeping in mind the TLD implementation and anything under the root will need a separate treatment as such. So these kind of things come under the postulates. Then there is a section on evolution of the Devanagari language as such, which talks about the very deep grammar of the Devanagari script as such. Then we have a section which talks about the variants. In that we have four or five major sections. One talks about the variants as they exist. The kind of variant that is, we have two major kind of variants that we have identified as such, and both are homographic variants. We do not consider homophones as variants. Also, the case variants as they exist in Latin, there are no such cases in Devanagari. Then there is a section in the major issues section which talks about the software behavior as such. So as we say that the variants that we as we see are of homographic nature, how they look makes a big impact on how we classify them as variants. So if the softwares, just taking a case of browser here, if they are showing different behaviors, we need to have that in place before we identify variants. So that thing also has been flagged in the report. Then there is a case of whole script confusables. Just like though in this particular case study, we were only talking about Devanagari. But in future, there will be another scripts that will be made available for the TLD. And there are certain confusable characters across those scripts. So though not talking about script mixing, but as a whole, one label can look exactly similar to the other in completely different scripts. So that point has also been raised over there. Then moving ahead, we have a section on the extraneous issues. Means the issues that may not be directly related to the variants as such, but yes, they impact the analysis of variants, just like I just talked about the software behavior. Then there are a few things like a few things which should be there in the Unicode under the normalization, which are not there. So maybe we'll need to take care of them specifically. So that have been flagged in those. So that's all in the nutshell. In addition, there is one issue of the characters known as zero-bit joiners and non-joiners. So there are a few confusions regarding that, how we should go about them, because for certain languages, those are required as a part of the language. But going by the technical side, they can create more problems than the solutions they provide. So a careful call needs to be taken on this. That's all in a nutshell. Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed. Are you presenting for us on Monday at the public session?
Yes.
Would it be possible to have just a few slides?
Yes.
Excellent. Thank you very much indeed. And thank you for that. Any questions of the Devon Agri team at this point? Okay, I'm sure questions will come up later on. Panagiotis, I believe you're going to give the presentation on the Greek. We're just working for a moment to get it up. So if you just... No. I'll drive it here. Okay, here we go. Panagiotis, up to you.
Okay, thank you very much. This is a presentation of the report of the Greek case study team. My name is Panagiotis Papasfiliopoulos. I'm not the coordinator of the report. Evangelis Agredakis is the coordinator, but unfortunately he cannot be with us today. And here is the other members of the room, of the team, sorry. The current status is that we have given the report on the 7th of October. It is published, and comments will be accepted until the 14th of November. A general structure of the report is an introduction. It's a rather long introduction, but we thought it's necessary. The definitions of the terms that we used, some useful points regarding the Greek language, and we believe these key points is good to understand the language and afterwards the recommendations that we made. The proposed characters for the registrations, some issues concerned, the proposed solutions, there are two of them, the recommendations, and the appendix with the proposed allowed characters for the Greek TLD registrations. So I will get briefly the issues you can see here. Can I have the next slide, please? Thank you. In the definitions section, we have stated what is a homograph, a homophone, Greeklis, and it's a Greek word, even if its form is English, it's not English, it's Greeklis, and also, we deal with the aliased name and name aliasing, the bundling domain names, tonos, dialytica, katharevus, and demotiki. Tonos is the accent, dialytica is two dots that we put over a vowel if we want to separate it from the previous vowel. Katharevus and demotiki are two previous, are two different forms of the Greek language through the ages. And next slide, please. Okay, so for a non-Greek speaking person to understand the Greek language and how it is evolved, it is necessary to mention two big issues. One issue is katharevusa versus demotiki. It's a dilemma that that bothered the Greek people, the Greek scientists, and the Greek government before the Greek Revolution and since the middle 70s. There are two forms, Katharevusa and Demotiki. Katharevusa was an evolution of the ancient Greek, but this evolution happened occurred by the wise people, the scientists, let's say. And Demotiki is the people that the world was speaking. So this dilemma, since it was a big trouble for the Greek state, even people died for this, we mentioned it. But as you see later, we concluded to use Demotiki. The Greek orthography is, here you can see a good example, is the polytonic form and the monotonic form. The polytonic form
was used until 1981. I was taught polytonic grammar when I was in the school, the primary school, in the first grade of the high school. Here you can see an example. It's the first sentences of the Lord's Prayer in polytonic and monotonic form. But since 1982, we use the monotonic form, and it's almost 30 years now. And this form is used everywhere in governmental documents, in schools, in from the people, in newspapers, in wherever. So, okay, we polytonic form is used from some people, from one newspaper, from one magazine, from the Greek church. So we had to deal with it. But as you see, afterwards we proposed to recommend the monotonic form. Okay, so the proposed characters for registration is, as you can see here, the monotonic characters, because they are used today, and the polytonic characters, they offer no significant advantage to the average users for TLD registration, because the project was for the top-level domain. And if a registry decides to apply its own rules for the other, for the lower levels, okay, it's up to the registry to decide to accept polytonic or to accept also polytonic characters. Another issue that we had to think about is the issue of final and final sigma, the sigma and the final sigma, because we have three sigmas. It's the small one, the capital one, and the final one. The final is, it's a small final sigma, and it's put at the end of many Greek words and most of the male names, like my name, Panagiotis. The last S is the final sigma. So we had to think that in IDNA 2003, it was a mapping from the middle sigma to the capital sigma, and from the final sigma to the capital sigma, but from the capital sigma to the middle sigma. And that leads us to the example that you see there. It's the word is thesaurus. Thesaurus is a treasure. It has a middle sigma, it has a final sigma, but if you go backwards, then you cannot have the correct version of the Greek. In 1908, this is supported, and sigma and final sigma are different accepted characters, but reverse mapping is not possible. So this was a big thing for us, because this represents better the Greek language. Next slide, please. And here you can see how this IDNA approach affects this things that we are dealing here, the domain names. The first example is Elas, this is the country name in Greek in small letters form. The second is without the tonos. Tonos is put on the vowel in order to accent this vowel. And the third is in capital letters. And in the parentheses, you can find the small letters of the according to the IDNA 2003. So I don't want to be very detailed, but anyway, we had to think that a typical user expects to type the domain name in uppercase and lowercase and end up at the same result as it happens in ASCII. So we thought that a word or a string without a tonos should be addressed as a variant comparing to the one with the tonos. Okay, other issues are the homographs. Here you can see some examples. It is the regulator of the Greek electronic market. It's written in capital and in Greek and Latin. Athena, 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 it's different place to put the tonos. Homophones are words that you hear the same. You have you hear them to, as to be the same, but they are not. And Greeklis is something that we produced before the, the introduction of the Greek characters in smartphones, in chat. Applications and things like this. So people had to write in English, and like Athena here, Athena is the capital city of Greece. Athena, you can have all three different types of Greeklish. Athena, Athena with eight, Athena with eight instead of. But this is not Greek, so we just mentioned the issue. And we didn't deal very much with it. Other things that we have considered is that the majority of the words in small letters have to have the tonos in order to be to the one of the vowels in order to be spelled correctly. And we cannot avoid to think that many domain names represent words. So the user will expect them to have the tonus accent. And also for the same reason, because the final sigma, as we mentioned, is very essential for the correct spelling of the Greek words, we thought that the registration should contain the tonus accent and the final sigma character. And next slide. Okay, so here is a brief statement of what is considered as variant in our project, in our case. So the variant is could be the same word, let's say, if a label represents a word, accented by tonos, or in capital letters, since the capital letters are not accented. It's the variation of a given word in Καθαρέψα and Δημοτική. It's the monotonic and the polytonic form. It's accented or not accented forms of a word in small letters. And the variation of this string with the final sigma or without the final sigma, if it's replaced by a middle sigma. And the variations that arise by changing case from small to capital letters. So we proposed two solutions. The one is the variance proposal and the other is the small characters proposal. Here you can see the what we propose for the variance proposal. It's this as accepted characters, the small monotone including characters with tonos, the LDK and the combination. The domain name will be accepted at the exact requested form. The same domain will be allocated to the registrant, stripped of accent marks and final sigmas. That's clear. And the same domain will be allocated to the registrant, retaining the final sigma at the original positions. And next slide, please. Alternative positioning of the tonus accent is not allowed. Alternative position of the final sigma is not allowed. And some words which mean the same are not allowed. that stands for the Καθαρέψα versus Δημοτική. The applicant would only choose to register one, and the other should be excluded for registration. And two options, we propose two options for handling the allocated variants. They enter the root zone as D-names, or they are treated as FQDNs. And the other proposal, it's a more strict proposal. It's close to the previous one. The accepted characters are the same. The only accepted form is the form that it's originally submitted by the applicant. Only the form with the tonuses, the final sigmas at the exact position, and the same form, strip of accents and strip of final sigma or different combinations is not allowed. And you cannot have the tonus accent in a different vowel. And again, we cannot allow the καθαρεύουσα and δημοτική form of the same word, let's say. Because most of the times we deal in our working group dealing the domain names as words. We know that they are not words, they are domain names and there are strings. But since most of the people use them as words and they expect and they remember words and they want to behave as words, that's why we had to deal with these things. So from these two proposed solutions, the one that we recommend is the first one, and because it meets the user experience needs and expectations, and because we are aware of the current protocols and technologies limitations, because we understand that it's not the web only, it's the mail, it's other applications that we have to think about it regarding the protocols. Anyway, the second proposal is a more strict version of the first one. So for the next steps now, we are expecting the comments. We already have one, if I remember well. And we will analyze them and determine how to address them. And we suggest for the Greek, Cyrillic and Latin study teams to interact and identify cross-strip issues that might be present between Latin, Greek and Cyrillic characters. This is the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed. Any immediate questions? I'm sure questions. Yes, Edmund.
Hi. I'm just curious on the proposal one, the first proposal. You mentioned about allocating to the same registrant or applicant. Does that allocation also mean delegation into the DNS, or you're just saying it's allocated? Because just want to get a sense.
If it should be for the same physical person to have those two versions of the domain name. If you use, I'm not in the deep heart of this thing, but if I understand well, if you use the D name, because in the .gr we use the D name technology. If you use the D name, then it's an acceptable solution for the web application. If you, it's not acceptable 100% now yet for some other application. But the use of the DNAME could be a good tool for that you said, knowing the limitations in other applications. It's something that we use already in .cr, because we allow under .cr for the second level Greek characters, even polytonic characters.
Okay, I think that raises some other questions which we will no doubt discuss during the day. Kerry, I believe you're presenting the Latin case report. Do you have slides?
I have no slides. I have a text from Monday.
Okay, that's fine. But you're just going to give us...
I thought I'd push the button. Okay, sorry. In briefest review... Nobody in this room is unfamiliar with Latin script. We wouldn't be here otherwise, but in fact it is, of all the scripts used on this planet, the one that is incorporated in the largest number of writing systems, which means that it's the one that's beset with the largest number of orthographic rules, local variation, not just language to language, but within a language community, there can be regional distinctions that interpret differences between any arbitrary pair of characters differently. Latin characters appear in romanization schemes for just about every language that is not written natively with it, and these have yet another set of rules varying from language to language, community subcommunity to subcommunity. And as Unicode deals with it, the Latin script is intertwined with the international phonetic alphabet, so that there are certain Latin letters that got into the IPA first and were therefore never encoded as nominal elements of the Latin script, and vice versa. And because if we ever get into any discussion about phonemic comparison of labels, we're going to rely heavily on the IPA as the normalizing script. So there's yet another large set of issues there, a problem in itself. But again, because we all got here via the Latin script, we can note that via the ASCII subset of the Latin script. It may be worth noting that perhaps 5% of the Latin characters available for use in IDNs is encoded in ASCII. And although nobody has used the concept, and I'm not suggesting we start, there is a notion of ASCII discomfort. And yes, ASCII is not adequate for writing anything vaguely resembling the words of our language, but okay, we can live with it. On the one extreme, on the one end, and on the other end, well, there are a few languages that are written solely with the basic 26 letters of the Latin alphabet, surprisingly few. So they're happy, and then there's, well, we're not happy, but we can live with it, and then the reason we are here, sorry, we're not happy about it, and we're not prepared to live with it. That is what we are here for. On the basis of all of this, we clearly recognize the fact that the notion of a mathematical equation of one code point to another is so context-dependent and dependent on context about which we know nothing that we weren't prepared to risk the potential cultural insult to a community that has yet to join this discussion that comes along and says, you've made it impossible for us to use our language, which is spoken by 150 million people, because you didn't realize that in our writing system, ... So the notion of mathematical identity was just mathematically impossible. We couldn't do it. We did, however, note two situations that do require careful consideration. The one of them almost trivial, and that is if two code points are normally presented on a screen using identical glyphs, there is a problem. And that problem can be ameliorated by context. If it is clear from the adjacent glyphs in the string what script it has to be, then we're fine. And that's very easy to do when there is a linguistic context that applies to a zone. The root has no such attribute. However, we only found two characters that have that problem, so I'm not really sure it is devoid of cultural sensitivity. But it can be clearly labeled as the potentially insulting single exception to what is otherwise a policy and not a protocol issue. And the other thing that we saw, which several people have commented on, is that there are characters which are rendered differently in different operating environments where a combining mark, an accent, if you will, a diacritical mark, if you will, is separated from the character that it attaches to. Instead of appearing above it or below it or through it, it will clearly be following it as it appears on the screen. And if those little guys resemble punctuation marks, and many do, they look like apostrophes, then we have yet another problem. And the way we can see this being dealt with is in registry policy. And just make sure that one of these sensitive things turn up, context clarifies how they are to be read. And we don't know if that's doable in the root. But we thunk the best we could thus far. That's it.
Thank you, Kerry. Any quick questions right now for Kerry? All right. We are doing very well, even though we are 21 minutes behind schedule, but that was because the schedule was impossible. But it does mean that we have a lot of hard work to do. The next session we're going to go straight into is the identification of common issues. And Andrew, I believe you're leading this session, this part of the session.
Well, leading may be a little bit generous, but I'll just wait for the So while we're waiting for that to come up, I will mention that for this and the next section, I'm sort of assuming that people have looked at the taxonomy. That was one of the documents that was circulated with it, with the agenda for today. Those items are not on the slides because I figured everybody had them and it would be awkward to put it all up on the slides. So when we're actually working through this, I'm hoping that we'll just use the document itself to refer to it. Maybe we can put that up at the time. In any case, let's start with the slides. This is the document that I was referring to, but let's start with the slides.
Sorry, Andrew, is any of this the one you're...
I don't think so. It was the... those are the ones that I'm talking about, but I just... we could just start with the slides that I sent for this presentation.
Yeah, okay.
Or we could do without them. I can talk.
Is any of this...
No, it's not there. Okay, well, I sent them last week, but...
Why don't you proceed, Andrew?
Why don't we just go ahead?
Sort ourselves out. Karen, is it possible? Does anybody want a copy of the document? You know, a paper copy of Andrew's document. And if so, we might be able to organize that. Printed copies. Hearing none, I'll ask Andrew to continue.
Can I send you? You want me to send you the things? Oh, all right. Here, I'll just mail them. Well, we're spending more time actually setting this up than. Because, like, this is for 2 seconds. I just want to cover this. Let's just skip it. Yeah. So the goal here, literally, is to work through this document. So rather than working on the slides, let's get that that document up, and I'll just set up a few expectations here. The first thing that we're trying to do here, so we've got 2 sessions back-to-back. This one is issue about things that are common to a number of the scripts, and a later session is issues that are peculiar to a particular script. So I've got roughly 3 goals for this. There's sort of a big ultimate goal. And the big ultimate goal that we have is to create an operational definition of this term variant. If you're not familiar with this idea of operational definition, it just gives you all the necessary and sufficient conditions for a term to be used, for a term to apply to the case that you're looking at. So it gives you an operation, and you say, okay, here's this phenomenon. You run the phenomenon through the operation. You say, well, does it qualify as one of these things, yes or no? And what we ultimately want here, right, is that sort of definition of this term variant so that we can build an algorithm that allows us to say, here we've got a string here. Do we have a variant problem, yes or no? If we can't my claim is that if we cannot do this automatically, then this will become unsustainable. That's my claim. Feel free to argue with me. But I think that we need to be able to have an algorithm by which we can identify whether something's a variant. So that's really what my ultimate goal for these 2 sessions is. So the first goal that we have right now is to develop a basic taxonomy for the issues in the report. And we circulated that basic taxonomy, and we're going to work on this. The next issue is to uncover the issues that are common to all of the scripts that were studied. And I don't know if there are any, but we will see. And there are 2 ways that we can do this. Either those issues are covered in the reports themselves, and so every report has identified the same issue, or I think more likely, we will find that as we start to describe carefully what an issue is and boil it down to its essentials, we'll find that it does actually apply to all the scripts. Similarly, and probably more likely, is issues that are common to some scripts but not to every script, so that there's some script among these that doesn't actually exhibit this problem, but some large number of the scripts do, or maybe just 2. What I don't want to do right now is, for this first session, is to solve problems that are peculiar to one script. This is the one. I don't want to solve issues. So this is the non-goal. I don't want to spend a lot of time right now working on issues that are peculiar to a single script. There are several of these. We're going to talk about single script issues a little bit later, but I want to try to get the common ones out of the way first. It might actually be easier to go at it the other way, but I think that if we tackle the big problems first, then if we run out of time, we're in better shape. So those are the only sort of big goals that I have right here. We've got a basic taxonomy and these common issues. So if we can put up that taxonomy, then we can start to work through it. And this is, my understanding was that this was a working session. So that is all, you know, that's sort of all of the discussion leading that I'm going to do here. The rest of this is just facilitation. If people want to, have remarks or anything like that, it would be helpful. So we did circulate this. With the materials that went out before the meeting. How many people read this or looked at it? Okay, well, that's good news. So I guess the first question is whether all of this was just sort of self-evident and uncontroversial and nobody had any objections. Right, okay.
So hold on. Andrew, that's an invitation for people to comment. Kerry, you want to lead off?
It's actually a matter of the structure of what we're doing here. It maps into this, but it's not primarily directed towards this. And that is a lot of things were... there was a directive given to the study group saying, this is in scope, this is out of scope. Okay. Some of the groups respected that to larger extents than others, presumably because of the miscalibration of the arbitrary divide there. But I think it needs to be mapped into our consideration of all of this. What along the way did we initially envision as not being a part of this study, which by popular demand has now been included in it? So there's two kinds of issues, and I think differentiating between them will be an informative process.
So that's an excellent point. One of the things that we distinguish between in this initial taxonomy sort of Roman numerals on them. One, code point substitutability versus what we called linguistic variants. That is, things that, you know, sort of work at the level of language. So the idea here is that in the initial documents for this group, right, there was a suggestion that things like whole words and other things that mean the same thing are out of scope. But some of the teams ended up including those as considerations anyway, and so we've got that on our list. One of the things I would like us to do as part of this session is to come to some agreement or at least some sort of consensus about the extent to which we think that those are things that we can or should do something about.
Kerry, yes, please follow on, and then from there now. Kerry, first.
I'm not suggesting at all that the things that became apparent as important along the line even be discussed as perhaps irrelevant. I mean, I see no constraint on what we do now imposed by the initial document. But where there's a note made, the following team considered this issue, the following other team did not consider that issue. The reason for that may have been varying degrees of steering by the initial document. So that needs to be indicated. It wasn't necessarily unimportant to this study or irrelevant to this study. It's just that we didn't talk about it because we were told not to talk about it.
Right. I think that's true, and I also think it's true that now we have the opportunity maybe to include some of those things based on responses that people have here.
Just to pick up the point, I mean, we should have a no-fault statement or a not-considered statement rather than imply that some team didn't do some work. Yeah, because they didn't do some work because they didn't think it was in scope, and that should be indicated. I think the point is well made. And now.
Thank you. So, Dennis, you've been asking for questions since the beginning of the session, and it's not that I have none, but that I have too many, and I don't really know where to start. But now, from the cases... some also mentioned homophones and not only the homographs or the visual confusability. And again, I'm a bit confused whether this includes only visual confusability or it's going to be also homophones and other types of confusions. Another question I have is whether after we define what is a variant, do we still have something called defensive registrations, or is this going to be broader? I mean, how did people think about variants when they tried to put their own definitions? Did they narrow their thinking to strict variants, or they broaden the issue to anything that might cause confusion, including defensive registrations and other strings?
I could only comment on how people did that based on my reading, but I will say this: there's nothing about this process that precludes other things also being relevant. I mean, for instance, the string confusability procedures that are already established for TLDs are not necessarily affected by you know what we do here. That's a separate. How that will be developed by I can't say, of course, I'm just a consultant. But that's a separate policy line that is not, strictly speaking, linked to this work, as I understand it. What I think is key, and I just want to make this clear, because I think it wasn't clear from my earlier remark, what I want to do here is work out this definition. So I'm not trying to say what we do once we've got this definition. I'm not trying to suggest, you know, here's what we should do given things that meet this definition, or here is something that you should do, or even necessarily here is something that should happen no matter what the script is, because it's possible that one of the answers is we need to make those distinctions based on what the script is. What I'm trying to do instead is set up the conditions by which we can do a detection and say, oh, we've got a string here that definitely has variants. Because what we can't realistically do is come up with, the sort of list of all variants in every script. That's just not something that we've got the capability of doing. So what we need to do instead is come up with a mechanism by which we can set the necessary and sufficient conditions to detect whether something has variant in the string. And having detected that, then we know that we need to do some processing based on that. And I think that if we have categories that are adequate for all of our cases, then we may be able to use that as a sort of basis for an algorithm by which we can do further processing. And sometimes that further processing may be, gee, we don't know how to cope with this script. Stop. Right. That's one possible branch. But the first thing you got to do is your detection before I think you can go on to anything else. And that's what my goal is with this anyway. If we think that's a bad goal, that's on the table here. I'm not in charge.
Andrew, is a consequence of that we're really talking about character variants and not synonyms or homophones, because there's no algorithm that could possibly make that decision?
Maybe. So one possible way of implementing an algorithm by which you detect synonymy, and I want to be very careful here because synonyms and means the same are not exactly the same thing, right? Let me just be a little bit loose for the moment and say, suppose that we can detect synonymy. Well, one way you can do that is to have a sort of ultra-primitive dictionary for every word, quote, in the language, and then run it through that dictionary. And there's an implementability criterion then that I think, you know, winds up. But there is a possible algorithm there.
I have Carrie and then Edmund and then Francisco. Did you want to respond immediately to that comment?
Yes, just quickly. That issue is considered later at 1:30 session. We are talking about senior level issues, so maybe we can leave that discussion for later.
Carrie?
I'm also going to mention something that I'm going to really make a fuss about later, but I'm going to plant the seed now. And that's the policymakers are going to need to use the term homograph in its conventional sense. Two different words in the same language that are spelled the same. Yeah. They're going to need that concept. And we are using that concept to apply to what is legitimately called homoglyphs, that it's the exact same sequence of characters which are amenable to algorithmic comparison, by the way. So I am going to start by suggesting and then start by becoming really insufferable about saying homoglyph when we say homograph now, unless we really mean homograph, because the policy people who we are informing are going to have a homographic nightmare completely independently of anything that we are talking about, and we can't deprive them of the ability to use that term.
Edmund.
Yeah, I wanted to respond to the point that Andrew made, and I very much agree with that the variant issues is separate from the confusingly similar string issue. There are different policies for it. However, if we do think that is the case, we should say that very clearly, because Kurt is here, and you probably remember there was a discussion that went on in terms of the confusingly similar string issue, which staff and in terms of creating the applicant guidebook actually said that it is an issue related to variants. So if we think they should be separate, we should say so very clearly. And right now, with the interpretation so far, if they are considered visually confusingly similar, even if they are variants, they cannot be delegated. And so what we talk about here does have implications with the new GTLD program, at least.
Samad?
Just a couple of comments. First, if when we think from an Arabic script perspective, confusingly similar and variants are not very easily distinguishable. They really mean almost the same thing. So if some of these things are to be used, they need to be very clearly defined and if it is possible, have a definition which is obviously script independent. The second point I wanted to come back to Carrie's remarks, and so you're differentiating homographs from homoglyphs. I just thinking aloud what that difference is that difference between two strings having same abstract characters versus the rendered form, or how are you differentiating that?
At least in when Anglophones learn how to describe the English language, the word homograph appears in that. And it is the word bear, the animal, war, and the concept of bearing a burden. Those are two separate concepts, and the International Federation of Bear Keepers might wish to have .bear, and the International Federation of Grunt Workers might wish to have bear. Yeah? And there is homographic confusion there. Okay, words in the same language, that's what I'm stuck on. Because when we start talking about whole script confusability across script boundaries, the sequence, the thing that looks in English like a C-A-X-A-P, which in Cyrillic letters is Sahar, so that also is meaningful. You're comparing a fictitious element, you're comparing a word in one language written the way it would never be written with a legitimate word written correctly in another language, and that stretches the boundary of the definition of homograph beyond its breaking point. If we are considering the actual presentation form, the thing that we would say looks like a C, the thing that they would say looks like an S, the thing that we would say look like a P, they would say is an R. Okay. Comparing those presentation things, that is homoglyphic comparison. And again, because the concept of homography is going to be an element of the policy discussion, not the variant discussion, I don't think we have a right to claim it, to redefine it. We can add any sense we want to it, as Andrew says, as long as we know what it means in its domain of applicability. But in ICANN's frame of reference, the concept of homography and the concept of homography, and I think I'm coining that term at this point, are both relevant.
I think that's a good point. I will mention that we have a whole session on definitions later. So I think we may want to take that up then. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
So I understand what you're saying, and I would have a very different perception of these two terms from an Arabic script point of view, where, as I explained, each character actually can take a different shape depending on the context. So you could actually have a homograph, so something with a zero-bit non-joiner actually could create a homoglyph with the same homograph. So there's perhaps something which is within the script versus what you're pointing out across the script in the case of Latin and Cyrillic.
Yes, go ahead. Sorry.
There's yet another term that's central to linguistics that we haven't used that I'm going to raise later, and that's the concept of allograph, where the abstract notion of a letter or character in any language can manifest itself in any number of ways. The Latin script also has a number of cursive forms where the actual glyph is dependent on what it's sandwiched between. So we need to have a more nuanced terminology. However, we don't need to invent any terms and we don't need to redefine any terms.
Now, Andrew, how do you propose now to take the work forward? Do you want to use this document and step through it, or how are we going to work?
Let's do that. The document that was circulated was a collaboration, and I got to say, Nicholas did most of the work. I came up with some categories, and then he sort of tore into it by showing how it fit and how things didn't fit. So this is a working document. This is not by any means supposed to be, any sort of scripture or something like that. If we're unhappy with any of the terms or unhappy with any of the categories, the whole point is to, hammer that out so that things fit well rather than to hammer things that we have into this taxonomy. This is not something that we're going to use as a filter. This is supposed to be shaped according to the problems we actually have. So if things don't fit, then that means that the taxonomy is wrong, not that the problem is wrong. What we did was we came up with these two categories, the Latin one there. I don't know how easy this is to read, but you also all have a copy. So,
and I've just asked Naila to resend it to the integrated VIP list. If you can't find it, it'll come around in an email in a few minutes.
In a few minutes, okay.
Actually, those that are in the Adobe Connect room, I sent the link a few minutes ago, so you have.
Okay, good. Sorry, was that hand? Go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt. I was going to suggest if you can take us through the main tree so that we are more capable to comment on the examples itself, because I have a few comments, but I'm not sure if this is a misunderstanding from my side to the terminology.
So that's what I'm about to do this very second. So good, we're perfectly aligned. There are two Roman numeral categories here: code point substitutability and linguistic substitutability. The linguistic stuff is at the string level, and as Francisco pointed out, we're going to do that later. So let's put that off and work on things under category one here to begin with. So already we've lopped off like one whole category. Isn't that great? And then we have two big categories that are capital A and capital B on here: intrascript and interscript. The interscript case is we've already got a rule, right, that we know is in place, that a label has to be in a single script at a time. That's an external constraint on us. So this gives us a nice fact that we can rely on, and therefore we can stick first to these intra-script cases that are item A here.
Now, does anybody violently object to that statement that is a good constraint, a proper constraint?
It's a great constraint, but where is it articulated? We're taking it upon ourselves.
It's currently in the guidebook that when you apply, you have to be in one script.
Ahmed?
So what about ASCII characters? What's actually, how do you define a script? I'm just thinking hyphen and zero-bit non-joiners, are they considered part of Arabic script? Because they're not really in that part of the table in Unicode.
So this is an excellent point. I'm going to suggest that we put it as part of our terminological discussion later, but let me just foreshadow a little bit so you're not too nervous about this. What I'm going to suggest is that the Unicode script property is the fundamental but not sufficient condition for these things. You use the Unicode script property, and then you have a sort of inclusion set that allows you to extend that a little bit, because you've got the problems of common and inherited there as well, right? And so there's a lot of issues that are going to be there. So that's sort of the direction that I want to take. But the idea here is basically, we've got a constraint that allows us to focus primarily on the intra-script issues to begin with, just because inter-script issues are perhaps going to be a little less worrisome.
We're getting a bit of interference on the phone line. Could somebody mute their phone? There appears to be a conversation going on in the background. Raymond, doctor? Thank you. Kerry, you wanted to come back on that.
A question to you as a protocol expert, in fact. The mechanism that underlies IDNA, where Unicode properties are operated upon to derive properties that determine validity, can that mechanism be harnessed with a second set of criteria applied to derivation?
Yes. the short answer is yes.
Is that what you're shooting for?
Pretty much. So once again, my overarching belief here is that if we come up with anything that is not purely algorithmic, it's going to fail. Anything that involves, and now we send it to that committee over there and they get to decide, immediately causes a political nightmare, right? Because as soon as you get into that, you get into, well, what if how's the committee arranged and everything. So I really want something that we can say, we can point to, and we can say, we can write a program to do that.
So that's what our first postulate.
Right.
The second one is single script with the caveat that we need to define scripts in some way. So that sounds like a good point to pause and have a cup of coffee. 10 minutes.
Yes.
10 minutes, and then we'll continue. We had hoped to do all the common issues up to now. This is not going to work, so we will roll on as best we can. So you'll be back on stage with the common issues immediately after coffee. 10 minutes. Thank you very much.
Oh.